This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestinians are killed in Israel's air campaign in Gaza, where the death toll has surpassed a 20,000 threshold. The humanitarian situation is getting worse by the minute in Gaza, with international bodies now warning of looming famine. The Iraqi resistance groups target major Israeli port in their latest retaliatory operations over the regime's crimes in Gaza. Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in to World News. It's day 77 of Israel's genocide in Gaza, where Palestinians are facing an unending nightmare of bloodshed, with the death toll increasing by the hour. Latest attacks have targeted the southern cities of Rafah and Khan Yunis. Over the past 2 days, Israeli bombardment has taken the lives of around 400 people and injured hundreds. The total number of Palestinians killed since October 7th has now passed 20,000 threshold, most of them women and children. Experts in wartime mapping say relentless airstrikes and shelling have destroyed two-thirds of all structures in northern Gaza and a quarter in the south. All across the Palestinian territory, hospitals are still the prime target of the Israeli bombing campaign. We have breaking news coming in, another 21 people. Palestinians, I should modify that, have just been killed in Israeli attacks on a Khan Yunis, that's the south central part of the besieged Gaza Strip, and Jabalia there in Gaza as well. As soon as we get this, find out more, we'll get out to you accordingly. Meanwhile, according to official figures, around 90% of the population of Gaza have been displaced as a result of the Israeli war. And for those displaced, things are difficult as Gaza faces severe shortage of basic necessities.
There is no safe place in Gaza, but living in Rafah is really difficult. They heat a lot of water tanks. Life is really expensive. There is no safe place.
We saw some people, half of whom went to Rafah and the other half to Khan Yunis. We wanted to choose the nearest destination. There is no water. Everything is expensive. We can't buy anything for our children.
There's no safe places. Everything has been bombed and people are really scared. They tell you go east and then tell you go west. The situation is very difficult. People are gathered in this area because they were told that Khan Yunis was safe, and now they are being asked to go to Rafah, except that Rafah has been totally bombed. People are scared after bombing of Nas Hospital. People are really terrified. Everyone is afraid of what's going to happen. The bombings are scaring children and the elderly.
The United Nations Hunger Monitoring System has issued a report painting a harrowing picture of hunger in Gaza. The Integrated Food Security Phase classification says that Gazan households are facing the highest level of food insecurity and hunger that has ever been recorded globally. And now the World Food Program says the report confirms the devastating situation in Gaza and has warned of looming famine.
So essentially, this report sort of confirms our worst fears in terms of the really truly devastating situation which Gaza is experiencing right now. Pretty much all 2.2 million people are hungry, meaning that they are in crisis or worse food security situation. About 577,000, meaning more than 500,000 people, are already in catastrophic levels of hunger, meaning they're essentially starving. That is like one in every four people who's already starving. Just to put that in perspective in terms of the world, right now we have about 129,000 people who are in this type of catastrophic situations worldwide. And in Gaza alone, you have over 500,000 people, which is like four times more. And you know, what is really disturbing is not just the scale of this or the magnitude of this crisis, but also at the speed that it has happened. This is what I was saying, that about 21% of the population, meaning 478,000 people, are in crisis level. Then almost 1.2 million people are in emergency level. And then 577,000 people are in catastrophe / famine.
More breaking news. The Al-Quds Brigades, that's the military wing of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement there out of the besieged Gaza Strip, says it's shot down another Israeli drone over Gaza. Meanwhile, the U.S. Security Council once again delays a vote on a resolution on Gaza. The Security Council is now set to convene later Friday for a resolution calling for increased humanitarian aid into Gaza. It delayed the vote several times this week, and that is because the U.S. opposed the original draft resolution, which urged a sustainable cessation of hostilities. Now, since the Gaza war began, the U.N. Security Council has tried twice to adopt resolutions calling for a ceasefire, but both attempts failed as Washington vetoed the resolutions. U.S. moves have drawn widespread international criticism, with many saying Washington is complicit in Israeli genocide in Gaza. Israel's onslaught on Gaza has also taken a heavy toll on journalists covering the regime's bloody aggression. Now, a U.S.-based rights advocacy organization says the aggression on Gaza is the most dangerous situation for journalists. The Committee to Protect Journalists has also expressed concerns over what it called an apparent pattern of targeting journalists and their families by the Israeli regime. A group of reporters has protested outside Al Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis in Gaza.
We came here to denounce the ongoing targeting of Palestinian journalists as part of this massacre. At least 100 Palestinian journalists were martyred while carrying out their duty. The Israeli occupation seeks to prevent journalists from conveying the truth about what is happening in Gaza. However, the Palestinian journalists fulfill their responsibilities perfectly.
We say to Israel that we will continue to carry out our duty professionally and objectively, so the whole world recognizes the crimes committed by Israel against the Palestinian people. By assassinating the journalists, Israel cannot stop us from conveying our message. We will continue our work until this brutal and barbaric war against the unarmed civilians in Gaza is over.
We are gathered today at Nasser Hospital in solidarity with our colleague Seymour and other journalists who were killed by Israel. More Palestinian journalists are working hard to convey their messages to the world and highlight the conditions under which they work inside the conflict zone. We call on the free world to support the Palestinian journalists and fulfill their rights.
Social media giants have been systematically silencing pro-Palestine voices during Israel's ongoing onslaught. Their biased approach has been criticized by human rights groups that say censorship is furthering the erasure of Palestinian suffering. Yemenis have taken to the streets in the thousands in yet another show of solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza.
Allah is Israel! Allah is Israel! Allah is Israel!
Protesters rallied in the northern city of Sa'adah. They chanted slogans against the Israeli regime and its main supporter, the U.S. Protesters voiced support for military operations the Yemeni army has conducted in retaliation for the Gaza war. Now, those operations have included missile and drone strikes on Israeli positions. Attacks have also targeted regime ships or vessels bound for Israel in the Red and Arabian Seas. The Yemeni army has pledged to continue its operations until Israel ends its war crimes against Gazans and allows food and medicine into Gaza. Yemen says operations will continue despite U.S. announcing a coalition against it. Iraqi resistance groups have carried out an attack on a major Israeli port in the latest retaliatory operations over the regime's war in Gaza. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it struck the Eilat port with what it called appropriate weapons. This is the first time that Iraq-based resistance groups target Israeli positions since the Gaza war began. Now, the groups have in recent weeks hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for U.S. support of Israel. Eilat port, which was struck early Friday, is vital to Israeli trade. And that's because the port allows Israeli shipping to reach the east without having to navigate through the Suez Canal. In recent weeks, Eilat has also been hit by Yemeni retaliatory operations, causing an 85% drop in activity there. That's according to the port's chief executive. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah has launched a missile attack on several Israeli towns. Now, groups also targeted a gathering of Israeli soldiers near their bases in southern Lebanon. For more on that, we are now joined by our correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh. Hello, Mariam. Hope you're safe and doing well. What can you tell us?
Well, the Israeli shelling has not stopped, despite the fact that we are witnessing very winter stormy conditions, if we may say. We know that at least 12 bomb shells have reached one of the mounts in South Lebanon, which is considered a natural reserve. This is the second time that they continue to basically pound that area, maybe in attempts to burn more trees. This is what we've seen all throughout the border, but here specifically there was a heavy, a big amount of bombs that were fired by the Israelis against this mount specifically, which is near the town of Ramya and Mawahin. We also have, of course, continuous shelling. We have more destruction of houses. We even have destruction of cars, anything around there. We have more use by the Israelis of air force, of the Air Force, using, of course, fighter jets. This is something we did not see in the beginning or in the first round of the fighting. We have that increasing in this confrontation. Of course, Hezbollah has also been continuously targeting Israeli bases, but the difference with Hezbollah's operations is that they are much more precise, if we may say. Their aim is not basically to burn or to destroy houses, as the Israelis are doing. It is more to make sure that they have specific military targets. And we're seeing the targeting of barracks. You mentioned the gathering of soldiers. There was one in the barracks of the Shumera, which the Israelis call Hezbollah, of course, tends to insist in the, throughout their statements to name those areas that are that were renamed by the Israelis into some other Hebrew names. They are naming the original name. So here, for example, we have the Tarbiha town, which is called now Shumera. That is where they have a huge barracks, the Israelis. Hezbollah targeted a group of soldiers, a gathering of soldiers who had bunkers near that post. Then after that, even just at least maybe an hour or less, they targeted that same barracks, which is in, like we said, Shumera, originally Tarbiha. And so that was one of the main operations today. There are two actually operations against the same post. Yesterday, we had something interesting. We had an operation with the use of three drones. And the time before that, there were two drones that were flown by Hezbollah. One of them was detected or taken down by the Israelis. This time, three drones reached their target and scored really significant and precise hits. And here we're talking about posts that are behind the original Israeli post in the Shabbat Farms of Fresh Uba Hills. If you've seen our reporting from the southern border, you can see that the Shaba farms and Farshuba hills are pretty high mounts surrounding that area. So it is very difficult to go beyond those mountains and hit their targets. However, Hezbollah has been able to observe and know not only the movement of soldiers and where they're coming to, where they're going to be able to target them when they move, even after they move and when they settle down into other areas. We also have the targeting of newly situated posts by the Israelis, and they are being also targeted by Hezbollah's resistance very precisely. And this is what we've seen. This has led to a lot of calls from the war cabinet of the Israelis saying that they want to file either a complaint or they want to try to get more assistance from the Western world, perhaps from the United States itself, to launch a preemptive war against Lebanon, since they believe that as long as Hezbollah is not pushed back, and they want to push Hezbollah back to the northern part of the Laitani in order to be able to continue their war on Lebanon, of course, and even on Palestine. This is on one hand, but this is pretty ironic, many would say, because many of the fighters, that even those of our farm who have martyred, you can see how their funeral processions are being held in their hometowns, which are in the bordering town. So Hezbollah is actually the people of the bordering town of southern Lebanon. There are no one who is strange or a strange group that it could be actually pushed from that area towards the northern parts of south of Lebanon. And so this is definitely, for many people, just an illusion by the Israeli cabinet that they want to try to put in more, to get more funding in order to launch another war against Lebanon, which would probably be similar to that that they are launching against Gaza.
All right, stay safe. Thank you, Mariam, for that update. Mariam Saleh, they're joining us out of Beirut, Lebanon. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
A Palestinian referendum to determine the destiny of Palestine and Palestinians everywhere. That was Iran's official proposal 3 years ago, when even Palestinians would have found it far-fetched. But the U.S.-Israeli genocide, apparently in retaliation to Operation Al-Aqsa flood of October 7th, the world has been alerted to the long-suffered plight of Palestinians. And to end the shelling of Gaza and insecurity in Israeli-occupied lands, the referendum can work as a blood-free solution to the Palestine dispute that actually began in 1948. A referendum can't go down well with the Israeli regime because it uses each and every opportunity to further occupy Palestinian lands. It has not even heeded to UN resolutions against illegal settlements. But as far as international concerns go, Iran's proposal is a just and practical solution for peace. If the international community applies resolve rather than issue resolutions, it can hold Israel to a referendum.
Hello and welcome. You're watching Iran Today. In this episode, we'll be diagnosing conflict resolution Iranian style. But why should the Islamic Republic of Iran be so concerned about the Palestinian issue? In other words, what is the significance of Palestine for Iran in the first place? We asked this question from Mr. Mossadegh Mossadeghpour, an Iranian political analyst.
Certainly, the issue of Palestine is not only important for the Islamic Republic of Iran, but for all Muslims, free people, and even for Christians. There, Islamic, Christian, and even Jewish sanctities exist, and they should be respected. The regime we have seen clearly aims to dominate the region, disrupt regional relations, and render the area unsafe and unstable. Undoubtedly, from this perspective, the Islamic Republic of Iran has an Islamic viewpoint on the Palestinian issue, and its other perspective is a humane perspective. In my opinion, the Islamic Republic of Iran pays more attention to the Islamic viewpoint on Palestine. Ultimately, there was a nation called Palestine, and Palestinians lived there. There are documents from Israeli authorities that indicate Palestinian origins, and it's evident and documented that a land named Palestine existed, not Israel. Israel is a fabricated name.
But the Palestinian issue can also be significant for Tehran from yet another point of view, Mr. Mehdi Shakibayi, the director of Media Cultural Center, told us. He is also a member of the International Union of NGOs Supporting Palestine.
Considering that Palestine is an Islamic country and Jerusalem is the first Qibla of Muslims, and moreover the injustices that have occurred in this country, this matter holds its most importance for the Islamic Republic of Iran from three aspects: human, national, and religious. Religion, of course, is a significant factor. The issue of the establishment of the Israeli regime in the region, initiated by the victorious powers of World War II with the aim of exploiting and plundering the region's wealth, holds significance for the Islamic Republic of Iran. Fundamentally, the philosophy behind the regime's establishment is to confront any country opposing the interests of America in the region or opposing the interests of the colonial powers victorious in World War II. Hence, from a national perspective, the Israeli regime could pose a threat to Iran's national security. Thus, the issue of Palestine can be viewed from this angle as well.
With this resolution or referendum, the decades-long occupation of Palestine may end. But it will happen in a civilized fashion for both sides. It will bring peace to the region, and it may not be the worst thing for Jews. Because in determining their destiny, Palestinians may vote for Israeli settlers to stay in a reassembled Palestine. This is Dr. Majid Abbasi, the Dean of the Law and Political Science Faculty at Allame Tabatabai University.
The solution proposed by the leadership was to hold free elections in Palestine. All Palestinian refugees who left Palestine after 1948 have the right to return to the occupied lands, have the right to vote and form the future government in Palestine. You know that since the regime's establishment, the Israelis have imposed several major wars on the region. In 1948, in 1956, 1967, and 1973. These are four major wars imposed on the region, and the regime still continues with its warmongering. The solution referred to by the leadership is not about eliminating Israel or Jews. The Islamic Republic of Iran has no issue with Jews, but it has a problem with Zionists, who are invaders, occupiers, and have deprived the Palestinian people of their right to determine their own destiny. They kill women, children, and non-combatants in Palestine. The leader's proposal is based on democracy. Western countries claim that democracy is essential for them. And in democracy, it's said that every individual has the right to vote. According to this proposal, both Palestinians and Jews present in the occupied territories can participate in a referendum. They can vote, and naturally, the future government, whatever it might be, will be the legitimate government of Palestine. And this is the best outcome that could happen.
Now, what is the referendum all about? It's exactly that, a referendum, or democratic vote to uphold Palestinians' undeniable right to self-determination by the original inhabitants of Palestine before 1948, when Israel was created. It has nothing to do with throwing Jews into the sea or setting half of Palestine on fire. That sort of method was applied by Nazi Ashkenazi Europeans and threatened by Arabs who saw their brothers being thrown out of their homes by nominal Jews pouring in from Europe. Mr. Mossadeghpour told us anti-Semitic words attributed to Iran are nothing but distorted remarks with hidden agendas.
The proclamation regarding Israel's disappearance within 25 years was misconstrued, erroneously implying Iran's direct intent to orchestrate this event, a notion starkly divergent from the recent clarification by the leader. Contrary to the misleading perception, the leader's statements harbor distinct connotations as articulated in their recent address. However, intentional or inadvertent misconstructions persist both within and outside Iran, amplified by opposition factions and even within the Zionist sphere. This skewed interpretation perpetuates a narrative of existential threat, positioning Iran as the agent of destruction. This narrative, propagated intentionally or otherwise, fosters calls for increased armament of Israel, justified as an indisputable right to self-defense. Notably, the leader's declarations stem from historical contexts and governance experiences, yet these nuanced references are often overlooked or misrepresented.
نظرات جمهوری اسلامی درباره منطقه‌ای که صحبت می‌کنن به دروغ میگن که ایران میگه که باعثی یهودی‌ها رو یا صهیونیست‌ها رو به دریا بریزن نه این حرف رو دیگران یه وقتایی قبلها کسایی از عرب‌ها گفتن ما هیچ وقت نگفتیم اینو ما کسی رو به دریا نمی‌ریزیم ما میگیم نظر نظر مردم نظر اون دولتی که با آراء مردم فلسطین تشکیل شد تصمیم گیری خواهد کرد درباره مردمی که اونجا هستن از کشورهای دیگه اومدن ممکنه همشون رو بگه بمونید توی فلسطین.
The process of holding a referendum was outlined in 5 points before Iran's leader of the revolution Ayatollah Khamenei pressed on with its importance. The first point is that all original Palestinians, be they Muslim, Christian, or Jewish, are entitled to participating in the referendum. Dr. Hossein Rouhi-Varan of Tehran Faculty of World Studies believes Iran's referendum proposal is one of the best, although the West doesn't take it seriously.
The Islamic Republic of Iran ardently advocates for a resolution to the ongoing predicament. While Iran has developed a robust strategy and solution, regrettably other stakeholders, particularly Western powers, seem devoid of a clear strategy. Instead, they resort to accusations and fail to uphold the resolutions they themselves endorse. This behavior signals a deliberate attempt to vilify the Islamic Republic of Iran. Iran's proposed solution stands as one of the most progressive and viable plans, aligning rigorously with international standards, both in its political design and practical application. Nevertheless, Iran faces baseless accusations of fostering insecurity, coupled with efforts to bolster the Zionist regime's control over the entire populace in this region. Such actions starkly contradict the foundational principles of democracy and equity.
The second point in the process of the referendum is that representatives of the Palestinian people, be they Muslim, Christian, or Jewish, will themselves hold a management role in all planning stages and in executing the plan. The third point is to facilitate participation by all Palestinians in the referendum, especially displaced Palestinians, a worldwide project will have to be implemented. That would be identifying, conducting a consensus on, and registering the identity of all Palestinian citizens in Palestine and elsewhere. An international organization will be responsible for implementing this project in the presence of Palestinian representatives. The fourth point is an international committee will be put together under supervision of and in collaboration with the United Nations, with Palestinian representatives present. Its purpose would be to execute the said plan and to focus on fundamental Palestinian historic matters, rulership, sovereignty, and of course, Al-Quds. And finally, the fifth point in the process of holding a referendum is that an international fund will be created with help from members of the international community under supervision of the said committee to support and see the plan through. The Israeli regime does make a point of saying Iran wants to wipe Israel off the map. What better way to feed Iranophobia? Occasionally heard such remarks inside the country. That is, however, not Iran's official line. The country's foreign policy is determined and announced by the leader, then the president, foreign ministry, and Supreme National Security Council. The Islamic Republic of Iran supports Palestinians to realize their right to freedom and independence and self-determination and choice governmental system. Freedom and independence were mottos moving forward Iran's own revolution of 1979.
Another issue is human rights, which from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights to other human rights conventions are matters written by Western countries themselves and have nothing to do with the Islamic Republic of Iran. According to these principles concerning human rights, one of the rights that nations have is the right to determine their destiny. Well, the Palestinian people who have lived in this land for millennia have the right to decide their fate and their future.
The person who said Jews occupying Palestine would be thrown into the sea was Jamal Abdel Nasser, the first president of the Republic of Egypt. Saddam Hussein decades later said half of Palestine would be set ablaze, referring to Jewish occupied parts, obviously. It was during Nasser's time that the Six-Day War of 1967 between Israel and an Arab League of Egypt, Syria, Jordan, and Iraq happened. Israel unexpectedly preempted the attack, beginning with the destruction of Egypt's air force on June 5th. Not only was no occupied land freed by the Arab alliance, but Israel occupied yet more. That would be a part of Egypt, Jordan, and Syria.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more to be said, but first a quick media review to give other outlets a chance to get a word in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to news excerpts from all across the world. Ayatollah Khamenei, Iran's viewpoint does not involve throwing Jews into the sea, Shafar Nad writes. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, affirmed Iran's belief in the necessity of conducting a referendum in Palestine to gauge the people's opinion, emphasizing that Iran's perspective does not entail throwing Jews into the sea. Moving on, finding a way out of the Israel-Palestine crisis, why a referendum might be the only solution to the problem. Tehran Times writes, it seems that at this point, with the absolute risk to God of Israeli officials towards human lives, a referendum might be the only path towards a mutually agreeable future for the Muslims, Christians, and Jews of the region. Iran has clear stance on Palestine, President Raisi says. The Iranian president, Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi, has highlighted the fact that the Islamic Republic of Iran has a clear stance on the issue of Palestine while stressing that the Zionist regime is an occupier. Irna Rice, the Iranian president, Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi, said Iran believes that the strategic and democratic way out of the Palestinian conflict would be one that respects the ideas of all Palestinians, including Muslims, Christians, and Jews. Now, Hamas operation upended U.S. political agenda in region, leader says. Quoting from the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Mahmoud Rice, the historic event of Al-Aqsa Storm is against the Zionist regime, but it's aimed at de-Americanization. This incident literally managed to disrupt the table of American policies in the region, and God willing, if this storm continues, it will wipe up the whole table. That's it from me. Thank you so much for being with us, and see you later.
Iran's leader actually stressed the importance of a referendum on February 5th, 2020, in addressing various groups. Well, that was over half a century later than Nasser. But he did it. Ayatollah Khamenei praised the brave resistance of Palestinians and their freedom fighters against bullying and occupation. But his and Iran's proposed method and means to ending the Israeli occupation is the referendum, which was registered by the UN in Iran's name. It's one of the better solutions.
In advocating for a solution, the Islamic Republic of Iran proposes a comprehensive international referendum that enables widespread participation, elucidating the collective desires and preferences of the concerned populace. Regrettably, Israel staunchly opposes this proposition. Despite the displacement of approximately 70% of the regional Palestinian community from their ancestral lands, a substantial majority still resides within the region. If a referendum were to transpire, the current demographic composition, with nearly 7.3 million Palestinians compared to approximately 6.6 million Jews, indicates a likely outcome favoring the Palestinian cause. Iran's proposal aligns with democratic principles and the global discourse on the importance of respecting public opinion. Notably, any insinuations or rhetoric hinting at violence against Jews, including notions of drowning them, remain utterly divorced from the Islamic Republic of Iran's stance. While historical figures such as the late Jamal Abdel Nasser of Egypt may have employed such language in the past, it's crucial to underscore that Islamic Republic of Iran has never espoused any declarations advocating for the subjugation of Jews at sea or otherwise.
Here's America's solution, proposed during the Trump era by former U.S. President Trump's advisor and son-in-law Jared Kushner, himself Jewish. The deal of the century was named, but acted more as a deal breaker. It was clearly a Zionist plan sugar-coated as American, which at best put other Arab leaders in charge of Palestinian interests. If the so-called deal of the century had worked, Hamas would not have felt pressed into attempting Al-Aqsa flood operation. That was a series of coordinated armed attacks led by Hamas from the Gaza Strip into the Gaza envelope of neighboring now Israeli-occupied territory.
Various perspectives attempt to address the crux of the issue surrounding the Palestinian crisis and its imperative resolution. Iran's proposal advocates for a referendum, seeking a comprehensive approach. Alternatively, proponents of the two-state theory advocate Israel's withdrawal from the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and Jerusalem. However, certain stances, including that of Trump's administration, appear to sideline the urgency of resolving this crisis, prioritizing other concerns. They argue that bolstering relations with Israel and Arab states and recognizing Israel as a legitimate regional entity could potentially mitigate instability. Yet, assessing the efficacy of this proposition demands scrutiny. Has the Zionist regime brought about heightened or diminished security in the region following the Abraham Accords and associated agreements? This inquiry bears significance considering Israel's continued siege in Gaza, a flagrant violation of international norms that warrants condemnation. Severe suppression persists along the West Bank coast, marked by the tragic toll of the Tufan Al-Aqsa, resulting in over 300 fatalities and more than 1,000 injuries, accompanied by widespread destruction of homes. Such grim realities underscore the fallacy in asserting that diplomatic ties between Israel and select Arab nations herald a pathway to regional peace.
Iran's solution to 70-plus years of conflict, perhaps the longest conflict the UN has had on its plate, is steadfast and simple. Palestine belongs to the Palestinians, as it has been documented in history and antiquity. Therefore, the destiny of Palestine must be decided by the Palestinians. In the democratic world of today, that is the only way. In fact, a referendum can put the West to the test to see how true it is to its democratic values. The proposed referendum would be based on the principle of self-determination, a basic birthright for people to decide their own political, economic, and social system in gaining international status for themselves. Self-determination is a principle recognized by international law to be upheld by governments, whereas it has not been upheld in regard to Palestinians, neither when the existence of Israeli rule over occupied Palestinian territory was first announced, nor since. United Nations General Assembly Resolution 194 was adopted near the end of the 1947 till 1949 Palestine War, during which time Jewish immigrants to Palestine took over. The territory was known at the start of the war as British-ruled Mandatory Palestine. The war, or this central component of the Nakba, ended in the State of Israel being established by the Jews in May 1948. The creation of Israel was conveniently declared on the last day of the British Mandate. During the said war, around 700,000 Palestinian Arabs were displaced. That was 85% of the total Palestinian Arab population.
Currently, discourse swirls around three prominent blueprints concerning the Palestinian issue: the Islamic Republic of Iran's proposal, the United Nations-endorsed two-state solution backed by American and European support, and Trump's initiative. Notably, Trump's plan, although without any international backing, presents a stark departure from established UN resolutions, marking it as a unilateral endeavor focused on disrupting the Palestinian landscape and wider regional dynamics.
And Resolution 194 defined principles for reaching a final settlement and returning Palestinian refugees to their homes. Article 11 of the resolution resolves that refugees wishing to return to their homes and live at peace with their neighbors should be permitted to do so at the earliest practicable date, and that compensation should be paid for the property of those choosing not to return, and for loss of or damage to property which, under principles of international law or equity, should be made good by the governments or authorities responsible. The resolution also calls for the establishment of the United Nations Conciliation Commission to facilitate peace between Israel and Arab states, continuing the efforts of UN mediator Falke Bernadotte following his assassination. Well, that hasn't gone too well. In fact, given Israel never stopped taking from Palestinians, it would hardly want to compensate them properly for what's lost. No surprise, as it is an occupying force. Zionist Jews crept up as early as the mid-1900s, and now as Israel, they continue their occupation, guns a-blazing. Iran's proposed referendum stresses how it is, first, opposed to occupation, racism, war, and insecurity. Second, its main angle is the participation and opinion of the people of Palestine. Third, it is based on the legal principle of self-determination. And fourth, it is realistic and practicable. To the Islamic Republic of Iran, Palestine is not a tactical matter. Rather, it is ideological and humanitarian, a yardstick of commitment to humane principles or opposition to them. Palestine is, in fact, the embodiment of the pain commonly suffered from cruelty, transgression, and colonialism. That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do tune in same times next week and each week after. Don't forget to leave us your comments and topic requests. Till next time, take care.
Muhammad is my guide, Muhammad is my teacher, Muhammad my beloved Rasulullah.
I want to be like you.
Like you.
In everything I do, Ya Rasulullah.
I want to walk like you, talk like you, read my Quran just like you. Rasulullah.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear audience, welcome to a new episode of Like Muhammad from iRabi English Radio. This is Zainab Mousavi, and in this program, what we do is to talk about different characteristics and beautiful habits of our dear and perfect Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and follow him as a role model for us in our daily life and every detailed aspect of life. Well, in last episode of Like Muhammad, we talked about the way our dear Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to treat children concerning their character development. Since the subject is quite psychological, interesting, and useful for most of us, we decided to devote this episode of the program to such subjects again. And however, the difference is that today we want to talk about some training methods of our perfect prophet in treating children in the way that we want to talk about his reaction, for example, to their errors and different behaviors, in fact. Well, the first related subject is the just that our Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam used in treating children. It has been said of the Prophet that he would greet both children and adults. One of the great requirements in the education of children is to maintain justice among them. Therefore, parents with more than one child should treat them with justice, fairness, and equality, and in practice include all of them so that none feels humiliated. This is how the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to treat his children. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam came to our house while Hassan, Hussein, and I were sleeping. Hassan alayhi salam asked for water. The Holy Prophet rose and fetched a dish of water. At the same time, Hussein alayhi salam woke up and asked for water, but the Prophet did not give him water first. Fatima Zahra alayhi salam said, apparently you love Hassan more than Hussein. The Prophet said, Hassan asked for water before Hussein did. You, Hassan and Hussein, and this one who is sleeping, he meant Imam Ali alayhi salam, and I will be in the same place on the resurrection day. You see, one interesting point about the justice that our Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam has encouraged us to have among our children is that such behavior impedes jealousy among the children and leads to the best relationship in siblings. Okay, now let's have a short break and we will be back soon. Welcome back, dear audience. You're listening to Like Muhammad from iRabi English Radio. Well, the Prophet also fed his children. This shows how fully he paid attention to his children's need. Salman, one of the Prophet's companions, said in that regard, I entered the Prophet's house. Al-Hasan and Al-Husayn alayhima salam were eating food with him. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam would put some food in Hasan's mouth and some in Husayn's mouth.
When they had finished eating, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam put Hassan on his shoulder and Hussein on his lap. Then he faced me and said, "O Salman, do you like them?" I said, "O Prophet, how can I not like them while I see their position and value to you?" This story represents how much respect did the seal of Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam paid for children in the time when only a handful group of people showed good behavior with their little ones. Now let's answer this controversial question which might come to our minds. Did the Holy Prophet punish children physically as part of their training? You know, a careful study of the Prophet's practice reveals that he never punished children physically. Punishment of some sort is inevitable, of course. One can hardly find a child who has never been punished or faced strict behavior during his upbringing. The Prophet of Islam, however, never punished his children physically and would strongly oppose anyone who did so. Abu Mas'ud al-Ansari said, "I have a slave whom I beat. I heard a voice from behind me saying, 'Abu Mas'ud, Allah has given you power over him, has made him your slave.' I turned around and saw Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. I said to Prophet, 'I freed him for God.' The Prophet replied, 'If you had not done this, the flames of the fire of hell would have engulfed you.'" Okay, now let's have a short break and we will be back in no time.
Ya Nabi salam alayka, ya Rasul salam alayka, ya Habib salam alayka, salawatullah alayka. Ya Nabi salam alayka, ya Rasul salam alayka, ya Habib salam alayka,
Welcome back, dear audience. You are listening to Like Muhammad from IRIB English Radio, and we are talking about the way our Holy Prophet used to treat children, especially when they did errors or mistakes. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam saw a man of Bani Fahad, that is an Arabian tribe, who was beating his slave, and the slave was crying aloud, "Oh God, help me." However, the man was not paying attention. When the slave saw the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he said to himself, "I will get help from him," that is the Prophet. The master desisted from beating him. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam told the master, "Fear God, stop beating him, forgive him for God." Yet the man refused to free him. The Prophet said, "Give him away for Muhammad, but it is better to free someone for God than for Muhammad." The man said, "I freed the slave for God." The Prophet said, "I swear by God who chose me as a prophet that if you had refused to free him, the heat of the fire of the hell would embrace you." The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam did not punish even delinquent children, and he had a kind attitude towards them. It has been reported that when the army of Islam left the Battle of Uhud, there were children among them who were eager to take part in the war. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam pitied them and made them return. Among them was a child by the name of Rafi' bin Khadij. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was told that the child was a good bowman. The Prophet therefore gave him permission to accompany in the army. Therefore, there is no trace in the history of the Prophet of Islam sallallahu alaihi wasallam or even other leaders of the religion of the need to beat children as part of their training. They were always kind friends and loving leaders who were sympathetic to children. This method of conduct should open the way for the followers of him. In various times and places, as the religion of Islam is not for a particular time, place, or group. Rather, it is for all times and places and for all humanity.
Okay, dear listeners, it seems that our time for this episode has come to its end. Until another one, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Be like Muhammad and live like Muhammad and give like Muhammad gave. Shafi'ullah, Habibullah, Nabiullah, Rasulullah, Khalilullah, the friend of Allah, ya Rasulullah, Rasulullah.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio.